This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to the Outside the Box educational podcast for coaches, players, and parents from all over the world, where we bring you the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. It is great to have all of you on the show today. We've got a great, great show for you. But before we start the show, just like to welcome all our new listeners. We get listeners every day to jump on the show. We want to tell you a little bit about the show. The title, Baseball Outside the Box, simply challenges coaches, parents, and players to stretch their minds when it comes to baseball development. We want to use our passion for teaching the game of baseball around the world, educating coaches, parents, and players. Now, we got a few announcements, and then we'll get started. A couple things to help us out. First of all, you know, check out our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. You know, go to it, click on iTunes, Stitchers, the logos are on there. Love for, you know, more people to join the show. Give us a 5-star rating if you love it. Any feedback, let us know. Now, by joining the show, what's great is you're going to be able to listen to many shows. We've got some great ones like Youth Baseball Talk with Jim Cromer, who does a great job discussing the issues of youth baseball. Also, Chasing Pucks with Panger about the NHL and Bleacher Bums and many other shows. So what you need to do, you need to go to lineupmediagroup.com and you can check out all the shows. And last, don't forget to email me anything that you'd like to know about the game of baseball, any speakers you'd like to hear, any feedback, email me at info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. Okay, now, today's topic, it is going to be a beauty. I'm going to tell you the person's name in a second. Been trying to get him for a long time. He is so busy. He's all over the country working with major league teams, minor league teams, colleges, youth programs. He's one of the most visible people out there. Now, our topic is the mental part of hitting being is the key to your success as a hitter. And we're also going to discuss a little bit about changing the culture of youth sports. Our guest today, Steve Springer. Now, let me tell you about Steve. Talk about exciting. When you get a chance to talk to him, everybody around the world should get a chance to talk to Steve. Have him talk to your coaches, your players. There is nobody better than him. He's one of the best mental game of hitting coaches that I'd ever heard of. And he's also a performance coach. He's a pro scout for the Toronto Blue Jays. 30 years in professional baseball. Now get this, 14 as a minor league player. We're going to listen to a story, 2 in the big leagues. But we're going to listen to a story because it's a unique story. He's also the author of The Quality at Bat and The Quality at Bat Academy that he owns. Now, what you need to do is go check him out on Twitter because this is amazing. At Quality at Bats is his Twitter. I looked and I've been following Steve a long time. He's got 45,000 followers. You talk about a movement. This guy's done some great stuff. And also go to his website, qualityatbats.com. He's got the mental training videos, audio tapes used by major league teams, colleges, coaches, players from all over the U.S. and all over the world. So without further ado, I know his time is limited, but he's been gracious to be on the show. Let me say hi to Steve Springer. How you doing, Steve?
Pete, I'm great, buddy. I wish you could introduce me to everybody. And now if everybody could just lower their expectations about 50%, we'll have a good time.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm not going to do that unless I know that you're going to reach that expectation, because I've heard you many times. So I have no doubt in my mind, no matter how much, you know, we pump you up, that you're going to go beyond that. So I'm excited, and I think it's going to be a great show. The first thing, you know, people just have to hear about it, and I'll just mention one little thing. I want them to hear about your story, how you started playing baseball and how you got to the level you got to, because, and I know you're going to mention one thing, but I just wanted to mention this. You know, I was amazed. You know, I think you said in high school you were 4'11", 90 pounds. But give our audience, you know, a background a little bit and how you started playing the game and, you know, were you progressing? How did you get to the big leagues when maybe you weren't expected to get there?
Well, and that's pretty much where my story starts. I mean, I was a freshman in high school. I was 4'11", 90 pounds. And, you know, I was always a really good player when I was like 8, 9, 10, and 11. I was a 9-year-old. I was in the majors playing against 12-year-olds. And I didn't grow an inch from the time I was 13 to 15, really 12 to 15. And I had a very athletic family. My brother played 6 years of pro ball. My sister was the number one gymnast in California. My mom was one of the top 12 bowlers in the country in 1975. My dad's a spaz. I mean, if you throw him a ball, 50-50, he might catch it. And he thinks we get it all from him. Huh? Thanks, Dad. My brother was a star in high school. He was a year ahead of me, and I probably made my freshman team, Marina High School. I'm from Huntington Beach because my brother was a star of the team. I got 3 at-bats. I coached first base. My sophomore year, I grew up a couple inches, and I stayed on soft roster. All my buddies were on JV and varsity, but I got to play that year. My junior, all my buddies are on varsity, and I was on JV. But I got to play again, you know, and I'd rather play on JV than sit the bench on varsity. So now it's my senior year. I'm 5'8", 140 pounds now, so I grew 9 inches in high school. I just went from tiny to small, but it's my time to shine. I'm going to show them I can play. And I had a sophomore beat me out, so I did not start my senior year in high school, and I coached first base again. I was trying to be a good teammate and be ready if I got another opportunity. I live in Huntington Beach, like I said. I got 50 colleges within 50 miles of me. I did not get one phone call. My brother went to Golden West Junior College. He was All-State. I'm thinking the coach knows I'm going there. You know, where else am I going to go? I didn't even start in high school. And I went out for the summer team, and I got cut, which is really baffling to me, how my brother's All-State and I get cut. I mean, how about this coach think I sucked? And 3 days later, I'm home watching Oprah with my mom, not knowing what I'm going to do, and my brother came home with the uniform for me because 3 guys quit. So I was a freshman in college. I got 3 at-bats the whole year. I should have redshirted. I coached first base again, and I ended up playing in the big leagues. And this is part of my story when I go speak across the country. And you know, the baseball is the greatest game in the world because you do not have to be 6'2" to play this game. I mean, I was 5'8", you know, probably 150 pounds now my freshman year. Fortunately, I grew 4 inches when I was 20, and now I'm 6', 170 pounds. I got a new body. Like I said, I was always a pretty good player. I just needed some strength, and I really didn't need the height. I needed the strength. I mean, you know, what's Dustin Pedroia, you know, 6'5"? I mean, this guy's 5'7" with a good pair of cleats on, and he could shrink 2 inches and be a Major League All-Star. And so when I speak around the country, and it identifies with so many kids because they're all undersized, and not all of them, but a lot of them. And, you know, just keep battling, keep playing. If you have any ability, coaches out there, and you're getting the new freshman class, and you're going to get all these kids that just haven't reached puberty yet, I'm not cutting them until I ask them if they made an All-Star team when they were 11 and 12. Because those are the kids that have some instincts, and they're just looking for a new body. I went from a second-string second baseman to an all-conference shortstop in 1 year. I'm getting recruited by all these great colleges. I had a full-ride UC Irvine, full-ride UCLA. My best friend, Rich Amaral, who spent 9 years in the big leagues and didn't get there until he was 29, is going there. So I'm going to UCLA. And it was the greatest 5 days of my life until he looked at my transcripts. And he's like, really, buddy? You took badminton? I hated school. So kids out there, listen to your parents. Get good grades, man. Let your ability dictate where you're going to go to school. I ended up going to University of Utah, who had a really good year this year. I was happy for them. And this is the best thing about baseball, because whether you're in travel ball, high school, college, or even in pro baseball, and even in big leagues, you're getting evaluated by somebody every single day. And we had 50 scouts in the stands to see Rick Aguilera, Wally Joyner, and Corey Snyder. Young kids out there think Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, and Clayton Kershaw, because that's who these guys were. They all spent 15 years in the big leagues. And I went 5 for 5 with a bomb, 2 doubles, and 5 RBIs that day.
Wow.
And I guarantee that was the day they got me drafted. It was the very first day I ever played the outfield in my life. I sucked in the outfield. My depth perception was brutal. Thank God a ball wasn't hit to me, but that's where he saw me. So I get drafted by the New York Mets in the 20th round and send me to Little Falls, New York, and hit like 246, 11 home runs. Just did okay. I wasn't used to playing every single day, because in pro baseball, it's 5 at-bats a day every single day, whether you want them or not. And I was so tired that last month. And anyways, my brother got picked up by the Tigers. And so we go home and we're lifting and we're getting bigger, stronger, faster, not taller. And I went to my very first spring training and I barely made the low A ball team as the fifth outfielder. And so for the first month of the season, I got like 30 at bats. Guess what I was doing? I was coaching first base. I said, I got this. I'm almost pro at it. I've been doing it my whole life. You know, and how do you handle not playing? You know, I talk about because non-playing sucks. We don't want to play.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you how you handle it. You take BP like it's your game. You take infield like it's your game. If you're an outfielder, you take fly balls during batting practice like it's your game. And then you pull for your teammates when the game starts, and you be ready when that coach calls your name. And that's exactly what I did. And I think it was May 1st, our second baseman got traded. And I told my coach, I said, Coach, I'm an infielder. And he looked at me and he paused and he said, thank God, because you suck in the outfield. And I'm like, I know, I'm an infielder. So he let me play second base one day and everything's going pretty good. Eighth inning ground ball, double play, right between my legs. So that sort of sucks. I didn't play there about a week. A week goes by and he lets me play it again. And everything's going real good. Eighth inning ground ball, double play, right between my legs again. But I got four hits that day. And anybody out there, when you want to play at the highest levels, buddy, you're going to have to hit. And I end up leading the league in hits. I had 165 hits. I was second in the league in hitting behind Vince Coleman. I had 50 hits in August. Everybody else was tired. I was fresh. I didn't play the first month. And I still didn't know what I was doing yet, Pete. And I end up going to instruction league. Now I'm sort of a prospect. They try to make me a shortstop. So I go home in the off season. Me and my brother, bigger, stronger, faster, not taller. And I go to my second spring training. Now I'm working out with Hayek. And I see my farm director. He's like, Spring, how you doing? And I'm like, well, I don't mean to be an idiot here, but I just led an A-ball league in hits. I feel I should be in double A. Huh. And he looked at me. He paused and he walked away. He didn't say a word. And I'm like, wow, that went great.
Yeah.
And it did go great because it made sense to him the next day I was in double A. And so now I'm in double A, 1984 in Jackson, Mississippi. And we had 18 guys playing the big leagues off that team, which is stupid. Wow. And we ended up winning it all. You know, Billy Beam, the Moneyball GM of the A's, you know, mm-hmm. I was in his wedding. I mean, this guy had all the tools in the world, man. And this is why I think he's so successful as a GM, because he doesn't care what you look like. He's looking for baseball players. He's looking for gamers. And, you know, Lenny Dykstra was on that team. I mean, you talk about a gamer, right? A little bit of trouble now, but this guy knew how to show up every single day, man. He was one of the best competitors in the world. So the next year I go to AAA. Like 3.5 years ago, I'm coaching first base, and I'm one step away from the big leagues now. And I ended up spending 11 years in AAA. I feel blessed to say that I got two hits in each league in the big leagues after that story. I feel it's the baseball version of Rudy, and I'm waiting for a movie to come out to inspire kids. But, you know, nobody thought I was going to play in college, let alone Pro Bowl, let alone get to the big leagues.
Wow.
And I'm telling you guys, this is the greatest thing about the game, man. And don't let anybody tell you that you're too small and not good enough if you have some ability. And anybody that knows anything about me knows what the most evil thing in baseball is. And you know, it's the batting average, right? Yep. The batting average is the biggest trap in the game. Right? I do everything right. I hit four balls right on the screws, right at somebody, and baseball says you suck. And your batting average went down, and now we get the wrong guy playing.
Right.
And... you want to talk about some of this stuff now, Pete? Or,
yeah, but here's the thing, Steve. Here's what I want to get to, because it was important that the story came out, because we got a lot of players around the world and in the U.S. that listen to the show. Now, if you follow this, you went through a lot of adversities, you know, mentally, because we're going to talk about the mental part of the game, you know, when it comes to hitting also. But mentally, a lot of guys would have gave up. Now, it's easy to say, hey, you just got to keep persevering, just keep working hard. But, you know, how did you not give up? You know, it would have been so easy to say, listen, this is not going to work out. You know, sure, when you got the AAA, that's one thing. You're close. Okay, you spent 11 years. You still might have quit there. But what about early on? How did you just keep going?
Well, it's the same thing as when I spent 11 years in AAA. I knew the alternative, getting a real job. And I didn't want to do that. And I always felt I had the ability to play. I liked my tools. I didn't want to trade tools with anybody. Hmm. You know, maybe a little foot speed. That was about it. But... you know, and all of a sudden, you know, you're going to school and you're with your buddies and baseball's, I mean, it was in my blood from my
the time we were in Little League with my dad coaching us, and I just always had that feeling that I felt that was good. And I don't want to mislead people, because everybody thinks that, oh, just because you're too small that you could play in the big leagues. Well, you know what? You have to have some ability too.
Sure.
And now we get some body strength, and I don't know. I feel God just had his hand on me, and I feel he put me in 11 years of AAA to do exactly what I'm doing right now.
And it's
teaching kids how to get out of their own way. Because whether I'm talking to a Major League All-Star or the dad of a 12-year-old, my message is the same. And we got to be a better competitor than we are a player. And now you're talking about the mental side. I mean, this is why there's 40 rounds in the draft. This is why first-rounders can't get out of A-ball and guys not drafted spend 10 years in the big leagues. It's not always about the ability, because when you get to that highest level, that I'm saying anybody in AA, like I'm in New Hampshire right now with our AA team, you could send any player up there right now for a week and they're not going to embarrass themselves. But how do we get great at doing it every single day is what I try to teach. And I know, and going into it, you know, the mental side, you get rid of that batting average, bro, is when your career starts.
Yeah, and
when
Steve,
you say, I don't care what I hit, now my career starts.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that, because we're going to get right to the quality of bats. I just want to address a couple more things you mentioned, because I think they're important for people to understand. One thing you mentioned was how you practice has a lot to do how you're going to perform also.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like I said, non-playing sucks, and there's two things we could do. We could either pout and be a bad teammate, or we could work harder, right, and not be an idiot. I mean, you know, if I was an idiot, there's no way I played 14 years in the minor leagues. You know, I mean, this game doesn't tolerate idiots. I mean, they get rid of you quick once you stop hitting. And so now all of a sudden, if we're not playing, what can we do? Well, we practice.
Right.
And we try to get better. We try and get stronger. Right. I think body strength, Pete, is one of the biggest thing that kids miss out on. You know, they have these good swings but now all of a sudden, what happens when we get stronger? The ball comes off the bat a little bit harder. What happens then? That creates confidence. What's this game about? It's about competing with confidence. Because we're going to compete, but who's competing is the question.
Yeah. And you do hear a lot of dads, especially at the youth league levels, complaining, you know, my son, he doesn't pull the ball, or he's always fouling the ball off, or he's late on his swing. You know, I understand some of that could be mechanical, but the strength aspect has got to be important, because a lot of these kids just can't swing the bat. And I heard you say this, so let's as well talk about it. You know, you said if you're going to go out and, you know, take 100 swings a day, well, you're better off, you know, first of all, getting stronger, and then second of all, taking less swings, and then say you take 40 swings, and then maybe take the rest of the time and think about all the hits you're going to get, or visualize that aspect of it.
Well, I think visualization's like very important, because the mind doesn't know the body's not doing it. Like if I took one team and I took half the team and I said, go take BP for 30 minutes, and I took the other half and I said, go visualize yourself hitting missiles off this guy for 10 minutes, and you ask me who I think's going to have the better game, I'm taking the guy that never took a bad swing in his mind. You know, the guys that are taking batting practice, they're hooking balls off their foot, popping it up in the net. You know, it's like me on a driving range in golf. You know, I don't even like to go there because I don't want to lose confidence before I play. And it's just the mind is powerful, and too many players let their mind get in the way of their ability instead of help their ability. And I truly believe, you know, I made this CD 15 years ago, and it's as hot now as it's ever been. I don't mean that boastfully. I just mean it's mind-blowing, like how many people need the mental game. You talk about parents. You know, I made a parent CD also, and most parents are whack jobs, and they don't mean to be, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but they absolutely die for their kid, yet they throw little mental daggers at him when he's nine. And I told a story on Facebook, a two-minute little video clip about why kids quit the game at 13 years old because of the pressure that's put on them by the one who loves them the most, us parents, and I'm including me, and it went viral. It got 4 million views in 3 days.
Wow! Yeah, that is.
So that's the number one topic right there. It's the parent and the kid, and like I said, we would die for our kid. I told the story about I played tennis back home, and club champ, by the way, Pete. But I didn't need to say that. I meet my mixed doubles partner's boyfriend, and Never met him. He knew everything about me. And the first word out of his mouth was, I'm coaching my 7-year-old trial ball team. I said, nice. I said, so you know you're coaching the biggest self-esteem destroying sport in the world, right, bud? He's like, what? I go, yeah, your 7-year-old makes an error. He wants to cry. The other team's cheering. He doesn't like that. The coach is yelling at him. That's you. And then he's got to ride home with you. So for one error, your little 7-year-old is going to get beat up 4 times and get ready for him to quit at 13 because of the pressure that you're putting on that 7. He wants an ice cream, bud. He's not your little Mike Trout yet. Right? We get interrupted. I don't see him for 2 months. I'm downtown Huntington Beach watching my boy Mark Trumbo. You know, he's like my son. We've been talking for 7 years, 2-3 days a week. And I see him. And he walks right up to me and he said, you changed my life. I said, what are you talking about? He said, when you told me my son's playing the biggest self-esteem destroying sport in the world, you hit me right between the teeth. He said, I was so embarrassed I couldn't even talk. He said, 2 months later now, I'm the most positive coach on the field. When I hear another coach or a parent yell at a 7-year-old, I cringe. Me and my son go get an ice cream after the game. You were right. And my ex-wife, she wants to remarry me because she can't believe it's me. I'm like, sorry about that one, buddy. But, you know, but no, hopefully they got back together. But this is how we are as parents. And that line right there got retweeted 3.4 million times in 3 days because it's what us parents are thinking. You know, and now these kids are quitting with their kid body. They don't even get a chance to play with their young man body or their man body because they've already quit. Because, you know, when they get to 13, you know, I don't like this feeling. I don't want to play anymore. And then you got Johnny Testosterone Coach that probably played JV and didn't start, and he's yelling at him. And yeah. I'm telling you, if you're a youth coach at 12 and under and you yell at a kid 12 and under, you are not coaching him. You're humiliating him in front of his peers.
Agreed.
And if you yell at a kid, if you yell at a kid 8 and under, shame on you.
Quit. Exactly. I agree. I agree with you 100%. Let me ask you this. Hey. This is great. You know, I love the advice for the parents. The best thing, I mean, the things you're talking about. What else would you recommend? Since we have parents on the show, also, you know, what's a parent to do when he sees their kid failing? Maybe advice on, you know. You know, yes, be positive, you know, and be positive all the time. But what can they do, you know, to help their own kids? Well, because no parent wants to see them fail.
Well, these kids didn't come out of the womb with tension, anxiety, and pressure. It's built in them by the reactions of parents and coaches, right? And so we need to make it fun. We need to get rid of stats, get rid of the batting average 12U. Me and Rich Amrell, we coached our 12-year-old team. Our kids are the same age. And we would put little cue stickers on the back of their helmet if they had a quality at bat.
Yeah.
So now it wasn't about getting hits anymore. It was about getting that little sticker. And there was no crying, not one tear. And all they wanted was that little sticker now. And we had the biggest spaz in the league on our team. And if this guy fouled the ball off, Pete, we made him feel like he was Mike Trout. We were like, that a boy. Way to swing it. Neil, get your helmet over here. And he loved it. And his parents loved us because nobody's ever built their son up in sports. You couldn't. He was too big a spaz. But we did, right? And as coaches, we need to realize, I know we all want our kid to be the next Mike Trout, but if a coach is lucky, 3 kids might play in high school, 2 in college, and if you're lucky enough to coach a kid that plays in the pros, man, I mean, that's awesome, but they're all going to grow up to be men. And baseball and softball has the greatest life lessons. You know, it teaches you how to fail. It teaches you how to have success. It teaches you how to be a teammate. But most kids are quitting because of the tension, anxiety, and pressure. It's one of my go-to lines when I speak, you know, especially at the high school and the college age. If you play one more game with tension, anxiety, and pressure, I'm going to sign your butt up for the military because that's where that's at. We're playing baseball. I want calmness, toughness, focus, creating a little bit of funness. That's a word, right? I mean, I got to get 3 hits. Oh, and then somewhere along the line at a very early age, we've turned this game into a 3-hour timeout for these kids, like they're in trouble.
Yeah.
Nobody's in trouble. It's a game. Have fun. Mm. And I just feel with that, you know, put little stickers. It doesn't have to be a cue. Maybe you're called the Slammers, and you put a little S on the back of their helmet, and you're changing the culture of youth sports. And I promise you, parents, I get the emails. Oh, little Johnny's great in the cage, and he freezes in the game.
Yeah.
I'll call them up because I call everybody and I'll say, I hate to be the bearer of bad news here, ma'am, but somebody's turned your little messiah into perfectionist, and get ready for him to quit. Because we all want to be perfect, and perfect is the worst word in the world. You're never going to be perfect. One perfect Jesus in my mind, right? This is about being good, right? And as hitters, we think we have to get a hit to have success, and it's 9-1. If I'm a pitcher, I'm pissed off when you get a hit with those odds, but we think we need to get a hit to have success. And now I don't get a hit, and all of a sudden here comes non-competent little Johnny showing up because he didn't get a hit.
You know, and I want you to expand on the quality of bats. And the reason I want to do that is because I know there's independent professional teams that use it. Explain how a young coach or a coach can use this instead of the batting average. You know, what all the quality of bats are. I know that it may depend on a different level also.
Well, the batting average is never going to go away. I'm telling you, it's not going to go away. But until there's a hard hit contact title in the big leagues, right? Like I netted more balls than anybody. Then it's never going to go away. And I believe that one day there will be that. I mean, if I'm an agent and I got a big leaguer and now I could determine that my guy just had some bad luck and he hit more balls hard than anybody, that's going to play. Because I would rather win a hard hit contact title than a batting title because there's no luck involved, right? And as far as the youth, it's like I said, I mean, I'm like a walking CDP. I mean, the batting average, I call it Satan in my CD. Right, I did it, I touched it, I felt it. For my first 7 years, I always felt I had to hit 300 to try and get a chance to play in the big leagues. And now I'm 0-4, and I'm looking at that lineup in the ninth. Oh, crap, if two guys get on, I got to hit again. Instead of being 0-4 with 4 strikeouts and looking at that same lineup and saying, I need two guys to get on so I can be the hero. Right? I got a new game, new pitcher, new hero every single game. And most players are going to bring yesterday's feelings into today. And that's great when you get your two hits because I could talk quality at bats still in blue in the face. When I get my hits, that is the definition of confidence for a hitter when I get a hit. And I don't care if it's a swinging bunt or a little blukey over the second baseman's head, I feel good. Bring that mentality into the next day. And other than that, I tell my guys every day is opening day. You play every game like it's opening day. Nobody in the history of the game has ever walked up to play on opening day with no confidence because they got no yesterday beating them up. I told that to Paul Goldsmith last year, and he's like, dude, that's brilliant. On game number 162, I shoot him a text. I said, opening day. He shoots me a text back. I friggin' love you.
That's awesome. And the quality of bats, you're talking about, you know, whether it's base hit, the bunt, a fly ball that scores a run. There's all kinds of ways that coaches can pick the quality of bats, right?
There's no doubt. Anything that helps the team, right? Do I think a 2-0 jam shot's a quality at bat? No. But because we're all going to get them, I say let it play. Because, like I said, you know, I could talk quality about it. When I get a hit, I feel good, and I don't want a player thinking he got pencil whipped by the coach. So, you know, it's any bunt, any hit, any RBI, any hard hit ball, get a guy over, sacks, you know. And now you're going to change the culture.
Absolutely.
And as we get into this, I got some stories, bud. And like, I'm going to tell stories not to impress people, but to impress upon you that it can't happen to you or your team. It's just a choice now on how we're going to think.
Let me ask you, young hitters, at any level, you know, when they go up the home plate, what should be their thought process?
Well, I talk about four things. It's walking up to the plate with confidence, with an attainable goal to hit the ball hard. I talk about attacking the inside part of the baseball because there's a big difference between staying inside the ball and attacking the inside part of the baseball for me. And if I had a game tonight, the most important thing that I could do is help my team win. Can you imagine in the big leagues, Pete, if you only get paid if you win the game?
Oh, yeah.
Could you imagine the mentality change? Oh, it's not about you anymore.
You like golf.
It's unbelievable. You don't get paid unless you win.
Yeah.
People are going to be butting their butts off. They're going to be playing defense. You're going to be pulling for everybody. Now I got to get my hits. What's your batting average? And that's where the biggest trap is. So for me, I think way too many hitters try and hit everything. They're not ready for anything. It's really, really hard to hit 94 and 79 at the same time. And why would I want to until I get 2 strikes? Clint Hurdle's one of my mentors. He was a teammate of mine.
Awesome.
And he was my manager for 2 years. And I basically stole quality at bats from him. I mean, he would put the little cue stickers on the lineup card. At least I knew the coach knew that I had a good at bat. Even though I get a hit, if I had 3 cues with no hits, I know I'm playing the next day.
And he was doing that at what level?
He was doing that in 1992.
What level baseball?
I was in AAA.
And he was doing that in AAA. Oh, that's outstanding.
Clint's the man. Clint's a mentor. He's just the best. And, you know, it's like I said, I didn't come out of the womb with this. I mean, I learned from him and Tommy McCraw and all my teammates. I mean, Tommy McCraw was probably one of the biggest influences in my life. He was a coach with the Mets. He's retired now. And every time this guy was around, I was a stud. But because I'm an idiot, I'd carry it for 3 days. But as bad as I was, or as dumb as I was, I knew that when that guy was around, I was good. So I went to his room in 1987 with a tape recorder, and he was nice enough to talk to me about me and what he thought I needed to do to play in the big leagues, not anybody else. And, Pete, I'm telling you, if I was in my car for 7 years, I was listening to that. Because we give ourselves too much credit to remember what we're taught. Right? I give this audience my whole spiel and come back in a week, what'd I say? Something about the batting average, you know. Yeah. And so this is how I made the CD. You know, I was an agent. And don't ask me why I did that, but I was. And I was trying to get my clients to get a mental game so I could make more money. And I didn't even know what I had. I was talking into a recorder. The car door was opening. You know, the fastball right down the middle was something else. And my brother said, dude, you clean that up. That's good. So that got my head spinning. I went into the recording studio. And I gave one to George Horton, you know, Hall of Fame coach at Fullerton at the time. He's at Oregon now. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know if he listened to it or not. Well, I found out 5 days later, they were in Miami playing the number one team in the country. And he had his whole team listen to it 5 hours before they played the number one team in the country. And they scored 11, like 3 games in a row, thank God. And he said spring had changed our season. So that's when I sort of knew that, you know what, this is right. And it's been 15 years. I had to update the CD. But, you know, anybody out there, if somebody makes you good and you don't get something on audio with that guy for 10, 15 minutes, I'm not going to call you an idiot, but you are cheating yourself. And like I said, we give ourselves too much credit to remember what we're taught. And, you know, I'm the mental coach for the Blue Jays. I make an individual CD with every single player on the Blue Jays organization. They all have 15 minutes of me and him talking about him with all my staples. And some of them listen to it, some don't, whatever, but they have it.
Well, there's a lot of people around the U.S. and the world that have your CDs and audios. They're outstanding. Again, we recommend them highly to our audience, and we'll be getting you all the information on them at the end of the show also. We're going to take a break in a minute, but I got one more question, Steve, because I think this is important, and then we'll come back for the second half. The you know, a lot of guys take batting practice before a game, whether it's young kids or older players. And, you know, you see some, they take batting practice and they have a bad batting practice and their mind's all gone. You know, the mind's so delicate. How do you recommend the young coaches, you know, how do you do batting practice? Do you do it, you take it every day. Any advice on that?
Well, I mean, batting practice is bad. It's a 60-year-old throwing to you, 60. I mean, I call batting practice flips and T-work. I call it checkers. We're all good at checkers. We're all good at batting practice flips and T-work. The chess game starts at 7. The game. Get labeled a gamer. Get labeled that guy. You know, you're not always going to feel perfect. You're not always going to have the best batting practice. And you got to be able to let that go. I mean, I use batting practice basically to get loose, get some timing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if I just took flips before a game instead of batting practice, I was good. You know, I just felt that, you know, batting practice could be overrated if you have no approach. You know, and for me, this is about mentality, it's about approach, and it's about mechanics, and they're all three important, and it's in that order. And I'm almost, Pete, going to change the order to approach. I would rather have a guy with a great approach, 70% confident in okay mechanics, than a guy with ultimate confidence, a poor approach, and good mechanics. Because if your approach is bad, trust me, that confidence is going to leave the window real quick.
Hmm. Yeah, and no doubt about it, I think we overemphasize mechanics. We got so many hitting coaches. I mean, when you go to indoor facilities, that's all they're working on is mechanics, a lot of them. This is outstanding. Now, what we're going to do is take a 10-second break for our sponsors. We'll be right back.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.